Welcome back to the Bureau Briefing. Today, I am happy to have with me Mark O'Brien from Newfangled, a digital marketing consultancy in Chapel Hill, who, you know, I just met Mark the other day through a mutual friend, Joe Rinaldi. And I have to say, his story just fascinates me, and we're going to get into it. So, Mark, how are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you, Carl?
I'm doing really good. And you can call me whatever you want. You can call Scott. Me Scott.
Can I call
you
Scott? I was going to call you Scott for some reason. I don't know why. I just felt it. I felt Scott.
Because I'm Scott.
The Scottish thing. That's exactly it.
We were having the Irish-Scottish talk right before we started recording.
It's still there.
And it makes sense. There's this mutual respect. And, you know, I think it actually transcends just our backgrounds, just our heritage. So I want to ask you one question. I found some similarities in what we're doing that kind of baffle me. The first is my first career, I started as an intern at the company.
Wow.
And I saw that at Newfangled in 2000, you were an intern.
Yes.
So talk about that.
I'm curious about what your story is, but I guess we'll get to that later. So I did what I came to end up calling the O'Brien. So the O'Brien is a move, and here's the move. Here's how it goes. It's foolproof. Okay. I've got 100% track record with it. I've used it twice, but it worked both times. My first career was in cooking, and I thought I was going to do that for the rest of my life. I worked full-time in restaurants all through high school and college and just loved it. And my mom fortunately made me go to a liberal arts school, and I studied poetry because I was interested in writing songs. So of course you study poetry when you go to college, because that's just what you do, because you're going to cook for the rest of your life. And that makes a lot of sense.
The gross earning potential of poets is right up there.
Oh, right up there, along with bellhops, which I also was. So anyway, shortly after graduating, I found my dream job at a restaurant, and that's a different story for a different time. And fortunately, I succeeded quickly. It worked really well. I hit my 10-year goal in about 6 months and realized that this was not the career for me. I wanted a family. I wanted to be alive after age 30. I wanted a lot of things, you know. Nights and weekends sounded kind of nice, you know. And so I realized, okay, this just isn't the career for me. And then when you cook, if you just have to cook, if it's in your blood and you absolutely must do it and you can't imagine doing anything else, maybe just can't do anything else because you're so obsessed with it, then you have to cook. It's like music. If that's it, if you're Ryan Adams and you're kind of a useless person aside from playing music, you just have to do that, right? And that's the deal. And so I wasn't that. I liked cooking, but I didn't absolutely have to do it. But I found myself in 1998 at a bit of a crossroads. Okay, I had spent the past 8 years or so thinking I was going to do one thing. And now, after being done with college and with student loans, et cetera, I realized the thing I thought I was going to do was not what I was meant to do. And so 1998 turns to 99, and I basically, my good buddy who I was living with at the time got me into coding. He said, you know, you can make $40,000 a year tomorrow writing HTML. And I knew nothing. I did not have an email address. Okay.
Welcome to the game.
And, $40,000 a year to me sounded like it might as well have been $30 million a year. I mean, it was just an unimaginable amount of money. And so I did with Newfangled the same thing I did with the restaurant, my dream restaurant, which is called Al Forno. And this is the move, the O'Brien. I said, listen, I want to be here. I'll do anything to be here. You don't have to pay me, and I'll do whatever you want. If you want me to wash dishes, if you want me to put together chairs, whatever. I just want to be a part of your company, however I can be. And that's an offer that's pretty hard to refuse. And I was already working 3 jobs cooking at the time. Well, 2 cooking and 1 is a bellhop. And so I had nothing to lose. I was working 9 hours a week and it was fine. You know, I was, 21 or something. It wasn't a big deal. And, the owner, founder of Newfangled, Eric Holter, said, all right, I'll give you $10 an hour. And I mean, my spirits, I think I'm still coming down from that high, honestly, 18 years later. I went and walked to all 3 jobs and quit all 3 jobs right then, right from leaving Newfangled. And in fact, started the next Monday assembling chairs. He took me up.
That's amazing.
He took me up in the offer of assembling chairs and then learned HTML. And that's how it started.
Okay, so we really have a lot in common, and I want to make this about you, not me. But
well, let's make it about both of us. Tell me, did you cook?
I did not cook.
Okay.
I was a theater major.
Right. Yeah.
And decided that I was just going to act like I understood business and got a job at an advertising agency, but they weren't hiring. They just had a big layoff. So I interned there the summer before I graduated. So I just showed up one day and sat down at a desk.
Really? That's great.
And didn't tell anybody. And then I would just occasionally walk into meetings and sit down.
What? This is amazing.
And about 3 weeks later, I got asked if I could come in over the weekend. And I said, I don't work here. And I left. And I got a phone call and I got offered $16,700 to come back and be a writer, but I was a bad writer. So it morphed into other things, but it was the same kind of thing. Yeah. And they asked me what I wanted to do. I just looked at Melanie, who was the president. I said, I just want to be indispensable. So just put me somewhere and I'll try to be as great as I can be.
Yeah. Exact same mindset. I'm 100% the exact same mindset. I just wanted to do something. I wanted to be involved and I didn't know enough about myself or my unique ability. I hadn't taken DISC or Colby or StrengthsFinder or Enneagram. I just knew I wanted to have a decent job, you know, and decent to me. It was like, yeah, 16 grand. Yes.
I still felt like I have more money back then than I have now.
Mm-hmm. That's fine.
You know, I was the one picking up the tab, but I had no expenses. Right. So it's funny when you go back and look at it. So you intern.
Right.
And then you get to a point where you buy the company.
Right. That's just, so 3 weeks later, I bought the company and that's the story. So the very short version of this.
It's called the O'Brien people.
It's called the O'Brien. Offered to work for free. Buy the company 3 weeks later. I started as an intern in June 15th of 2000, in the year 2000. Then I was hired in July. I was, for basically the salary equivalent of $10 an hour, which I was thrilled about. Again, it wasn't the 40 grand a year my roommate had promised me, but it was still an amazing, in fact, it would take many years before I got to that 40 actually. But that was okay. Cause I adored my job and it was just wonderful. I was thrilled. Started in June of 2000, was hired in July of 2000. In August of 2000, Eric, again, the founder, hired David C. Baker, who we both know, to come in for a total business review. David came in and interviewed everybody. So I met David after being at Newfangled for about 2 months. And he interviewed everybody and he basically told Eric at the end of that process that, you know, he needed to fire half the staff. And when it came time for them to review me, he said, that guy, I mean, it doesn't really matter. He's too cheap to fire. It won't make a difference. You might as well just keep him.
It's the O'Brien, folks.
It's still.
So fly low.
Too cheap to fire is pretty good. You know, like, thank God I was too cheap to fire, because otherwise I would have absolutely been fired. He did. He followed his advice and the company shrank by 50%.
Now, how big was the company at the time?
It was still small. We went from probably maybe 14 people to 7, around there-ish.
It's a huge cut. And culturally, that's a terrifying thing for the people that are left.
Well, you know what? I mean, and that was one of my first experiences, right? And I made the cut. So there was like a survival thing that got baked into me really early on, really early on. But I was, I was 100% committed to Newfangled from the day I submitted that contact form asking a job. I was all in from second one. I started, doing some HTML, really enjoyed it. And back then, the coders were also the project managers. We had no structure for project management or anything like that. And so I was also on the phone with clients and meeting with clients and stuff like that. It was just everything, whatever I could do, I did. And then got into programming and eventually got into like bash scripting and became our admin, which is laughable now. In fact, the guys here who are actually technically minded do laugh at it regularly that I did that. But I enjoyed it. I just loved it. It was a lot of fun. And I remember those days of putting on my headphones and just coding. And it was great. I loved it. That was good for about 3 years. And then in 2003, I moved to North Carolina, down to Chapel Hill. And I said to Eric, I said, I'm going to move to Carolina. I'd love to continue working for Newfangled. Can I, you know? And he said, yes, for sure. He said, but, and at the time we were a very local company. We basically were in Providence, Rhode Island, and we did business right around Providence, right. Rhode Island. That was it. There was no national anything of any kind at all. We were working with agencies. We were focusing on that even back then, but it was very, very local. He said, well, you go down there, you might as well, you know, work a new market. And so that's when I got into biz dev. And that's when everything changed, because I realized, okay, I'm not a coder. I'm a biz dev person, and I love relationships and all of that. And we started having a lot of success on that front, and no one at Newfangled ever really wanted to do that. So I was the first person by this point in our 10-year history who liked it and who was kind of good at it. And so then I became president in 04, and then the whole company relocated to North Carolina. And then in 2008, back to David Baker, David C. Baker. Eric, I was running the company pretty well, and I enjoyed it. And there was a time there when I was the only project manager. I was one of three developers. I was the biz dev guy. You know, like,
right.
where I was still the sysadmin. lots of hats. All the hats except for design. I was never a designer.
And you thought you were going to get your weekends back?
You know what? I had to say. Okay, that's. I'm glad you said that. I've never worked weekends. Newfangled is not a work on the weekend kind of company typically. Now, good. We all have a Newfangled, and there's still times when we do, right? But Eric, from the very beginning, and something I loved so much about Newfangled, and one of the reasons I stayed when, you know, times were really tough for a long time. 2000, 2003 were not salad days. You know, it was skimpy as skimpy gets, you know, holding your paycheck kind of thing. And, you know, we might go out of business any month kind of thing. You know, it was we were hanging on. But even then, we didn't do weekends and had very reasonable schedule. Like, you know, 40-hour work weeks has been the thing, and to this day is still the thing. Now, again, people go above and beyond and is required at times, but the norm is to have a very reasonable work-life balance to the point where we now give everybody 2 months of PTO all in as it shakes out, and, you know, things like that. We just really believe in being away from the office. So, you know, I was kind of running the company by 08, or pretty much running the company by 08. And Eric wanted to pursue. He was sort of disappointed because he was a classic entrepreneur. He always had ideas like, oh, we should do this, we should do that, we should do that. And I kept saying, no, we need to just do this one thing that we're good at. We have to get better at this thing before we do four other things. And he's a really smart guy, and he would see my logic each time. And he would acquiesce. He's like, yeah, okay, we can't do that. And but he was disappointed. He wasn't fulfilled. He wanted to start stuff. He loved starting things. Yeah. And I was like just dousing his fire every single time. And so he was going to start his own company, being a consultant for firms. And so he went to David to get what I jokingly called consulting.
And nice.
And David said, so, okay, you're here because you want to be a consultant. So who's running Newfangled? And then he described to David all the things I was doing, this guy who was formerly too cheap to
buy. The guy who's too cheap.
Yeah. And he said, okay, David said to Eric, he said, okay, you've got a choice here. You're going to go back to the office in 3 days after he was done with him in Nashville, and you're either going to sell the company to him or you're going to fire him. And I had no idea this was happening. I was like happily, you know, just, you know, doing my thing at Newfangled. No idea that my fate was hanging in the balance here. And he came back.
It's a valid call though, right? It's a valid call.
Valid call.
It's not going to work out with both of you there.
Valid call. And he wasn't happy. He wasn't happy, but he knew Newfangled was doing what it was supposed to be doing. He's a really wise guy. He's a very, very interesting man. So he came back and he said, I want to sell you Newfangled. You want to buy it? And I said, yes, like on the spot. I said, yes. But this was 08. This is the very beginning of 08. And it took us, and remember what happened during 08, everything went to hell. And it took us the whole year. So the beginning of 08, banks were like, yeah, we'll help you with this, blah, blah, blah. But by the time, you know, July hit, then October hit, it was like, no, we're not going to give you any money under any circumstances. So we had to figure out how to do a buyout, which we did. And I started buying the company in 09 and finished in 13. So it's been quite the ride.
So this is the concept of stables and volatiles, right? So, you are a stable.
Okay.
You were like, this works.
Yeah, right.
I know this works, and we've iterated enough, and now we need to hear.
Yeah.
Whereas with Eric, he was like, no, we need to change it. We need to change it. We need to change it. We need to change it.
Yep.
And it was the same with me. I actually had one of our lead devs told me that we had gotten the company, my company Engine, up to about 40 people. And one of my lead devs said, "Carl, this is an amazing business model. You know what? So were the last six. Can you please stop?"
Yeah. Right.
"We just want to know where we work."
Yeah. Fair.
And so I didn't have anybody. I wish at that point I had had somebody like you that I could have sold it to. Instead, sadly, I just withdrew and it kind of, it fluttered out of existence. But you take over. And now you're saying that shift to being a marketing consultancy for other digital and also traditional marketing firms happened earlier. Now that happened with David coming in?
No. So throughout all this time, through 2013, from 95 to 2013, we were a web development company.
Okay, so you were still generalist.
Oh yeah. We were definitely working with agencies the whole time through. So we were basically that was our angle. We're partnering with agencies either to help them build their site or their client sites.
Gotcha. So you were working with more traditional advertising agencies?
Yeah, marketing firms for the most part. Yeah.
Yeah, who didn't really get the web and needed that strong partner and sometimes handed you business cards and said, "Hey, this is who you work for."
We never did that. Yeah, we were asked to do that pretty regularly. We never did it. Thank God. That would have been a mess.
We had a letter of agreement that would make them choke. Got it. "These are the things we will never do."
We will never do. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that was for basically 20 years. That's what we did.
So talk about that shift.
Right. Yeah. So then came Traction, right? The EOS system, or the EOS, I guess you can call it. I started in the strategic coach program and we started adopting Traction right around the same time, which was 2014. It was May 2014 for Coach, May of 2015 for Traction. And what Traction made us do was just look in the mirror and be really honest about, okay, what is it that Newfangled specifically is uniquely suited to do to have the most impact on our clients? How can we, given our strengths and weaknesses, have the most impact on our clients? And, you know, is it, well, for the, what we've done for the past 20 years, is it actually coding the website? Are we so great at coding the website that it is going to be so much of a better website than anyone else could ever do that it is going to radically change the client's business? Is that the truth? No, that's 100% not the truth. And that was a terrifying truth. But the thing about Traction is it just keeps on putting the truth in your face and you cannot ignore it. If you do it properly, you cannot ignore the most uncomfortable truths. And so we realized, okay, we've got to change something. By this point, we had gotten very involved in marketing automation. We had gotten very involved in CRM. We had gotten very involved in content consulting. And we realized, you know, our clients who are these, you know, marketing firms for the most part, they are not good at marketing themselves to a firm, pretty much. It's a bit of a paradox, but it's just true. They're great marketers, but they're not great marketing marketers, if that makes sense. And so we said, we're really, really, really good at that. And there's a huge hole there. This is what we need to do. And so we reinvented the company using Traction over, you know, you could argue that reinvention is still going on, but really pretty much from mid-2015 through the end of 2016 is when the reinvention took place. And the way I describe Traction is that it was a full reinvention. It was an incredible amount of change over a relatively short amount of time. And what Traction allowed us to do was something that I liken to Tai Chi. You know Tai Chi?
Yeah.
What's your impression of Tai Chi?
So my dad, this is my main connection with it. My dad, who's in his 80s with dementia and anger problems, is trying Tai Chi.
Okay.
It is the funniest thing to watch somebody try to remember stuff when they have memory problems and they get angry really easy. So to me, Tai Chi is sort of hilarious.
Got it.
But when I was in Portland and I saw a bunch of people doing Tai Chi down by the river.
Yeah, right.
And it was just this beautiful kind of yoga dance.
Yeah, kind of soft, smooth, slow.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, right. So the truth about Tai Chi is the actual art of Tai Chi is you're practicing those. Tai Chi is one of the most deadly practices that exists in the entire field of martial art. You're doing those slow movements so that when you do it full speed, they are precisely executed. And they're vicious movements. I mean, what those things are meant to do are very physically debilitating. But you practice them incredibly slowly so that at real speed, they're done perfectly, right? That's what Tai Chi is actually about. And that's how I describe traction. Traction allows you to take these massive problems, these you know, completely business inverting problems, and execute them flawlessly because you're breaking them down to the most minute components and you're solving problems at a solvable level so that day by day you're making progress. And at the end of 18 months, you can't believe that things have changed. That's what traction has done for us.
So how does it impact the current clients that you have, the culture? It feels like making those changes in that rapid time frame is going to cause a lot of upheaval.
Yeah, in some ways it did. You know, we still had a Rhode Island office from all those years back, and we closed that office, and that was really difficult. We had three people who had been with us for 15 years plus each. One of whom predated me, really two of whom, but one had left and come back. It doesn't matter. So a few, you know, meaning they've been there for a really long time. And
I knew what you meant.
Yeah, yeah. And he's actually great. He still does a lot of work with us, and we've been able to send quite a bit of work to them because we're not doing that kind of work anymore, right? And so we were able to help each of them with a soft landing. One just got a job coding. The other two started their own companies and get a lot of work from Newfangled, which is great. So that was really difficult. On the client side, you know, we just started selling something new, and it made a lot of sense to our clients. And there were a lot of people for whom we had done websites years ago, and they came back for the consulting offering. And that was really exciting to see. And what was more exciting to see was the impact we were able to have, how healthy and happy those relationships became, how profitable those relationships became, how happy the people inside of Newfangled became, because we were kind of running into a wall with web development, and it was really stressful. And typically by the end of the projects, no one really liked each other anymore. And, you know, it was really hard. Yeah. It was really, really, really hard. And it burnt our people out. Our project managers had a really high rate of burnout here. And that was tough. You know, it was tough. But everything's changed. The profitability is completely different. The happiness level on the both inside of Newfangled and with the clients, completely different. Our vision for the future is different. Our ability to be flexible is greatly expanded. It's, you know, we're never go back. We're never ever go back. We're thrilled with the difference that it's made for us and for our clients.
So what do you see as common issues a digital agency has when they come to you initially?
Yeah, the most common issue is that they've realized that they need to market, right? They have tapped out the referral network, right? And they built the business to this point on referrals. They've dabbled in marketing. They probably have a blog. They do something on social media, but their blog's all about them and, you know, current event kind of stuff. It's not expertise.
The tone of your voice when you said that, they have a blog, they do the things. That was awesome.
But yeah, they realize that if they're going to grow, or some of them are worried that if they want to stay relevant and even, you know, stay even, they've got to start marketing. They've tried it enough on their own to know that they're not really good at it, and that they're missing something. And the other thing that we see typical in the industry is that, you know, there's these one-offs. They try blogging, they try automation, they adopt a CRM, they change their site platform, and they think that these one-off things, they hire a biz dev person, and they think these one-off things are going to work. And the truth is, those one-off things will never, ever work. No matter how well you do any one of those things, it is never going to work for you. Ever. And that's just the truth. And we know that's the truth because we've seen the patterns. And the pattern is that there are six things that have got to be in place. And if those six things are not done properly and consistently for good, then marketing is not going to work. And it's very difficult for even marketing firms, digital firms, full-blown agencies, whatever you want to call them. It's difficult for those firms to execute all six at once. And so that's why they look for outside help.
And one of the things that I saw when I was looking over Newfangled is that you can't just help anybody.
Right, right.
They've got to be really good or have a deep level of knowledge about something.
Yeah, if information asymmetry is not in place, we cannot help, right? That's the thing. And so for years it was, okay, we work with marketing firms. And that has nothing to do with it. There are plenty of generalist marketing firms out there that we cannot help. Plenty of generalist digital shops that we cannot help. If you are not selling your expertise, and if you're not winning business regularly because of the fact that you know something that the other people don't know, then we can't help. Because all that can really be marketed is intelligence, truly. You know, if you're a digital shop, if you're competing on price, you're kind of screwed. If you're competing on speed, you're kind of screwed. If you're competing on volume, you're kind of screwed, right? You're not going to have a very successful shop if any of those things are true, or if all three of those things are true, right? If you're really screwed, if all three of those things are true. It's the only way to scale a business is to be smarter. And the only way to be smarter, truly, in a sustainable way as a business, is to be focused. Because when you're focused, you're going to just learn more things about your area of focus than the other people are willing to be disciplined enough to learn. And any individual is not smart enough to build the company around permanently. It has to be a collection of smart individuals who are able to do pattern matching. And they do pattern matching because they're doing the same sort of things for the same sort of people again and again and again. And they simply see things that everyone else is blind to.
Your passion is just coming through so strong. It's like, this is your thing. I mean, it's making me smile, and I'm so glad we're having this conversation, because it's something I think everybody needs, but there's so much fear of, if I take my foot off the gas, mm-hmm. the thing is going to crash.
Yeah, of course.
Right.
Yeah.
But to do this, you kind of have to take your foot off the gas, right? You can't just keep charging down the things that you think work if you've got to get focused.
Well, Chris Butler, our COO, has a phrase that he uses that maybe he created, maybe he co-opted all the time. You know, you've got to change out the plumbing while the water's still running, right? And that's true. So you can't really take your foot off the gas. You know, why are you making this transition? Oh,
that's messy.
Yeah,
that's
messy. It's really messy, depending on which plumbing you're changing out, especially. It's messy. But yeah, you actually can't take your foot off the gas. You've got to keep bringing business in. It's not as if you can stop and just take 6 months to reinvent yourself. That's not reality, right? No one has the luxury of doing that. You've got to change while the machine's in motion. And, you know, Newfangled had to do that. Companies who really survive the test of time all do that. No one escapes this, right? This is, if you want to survive, you are going to do this one way or another, sometime or another. And so it's a matter of doing it the right way, a matter of being measured, and really, you know, people tend to need guides through that process.
Well, and this, to me, this feels so much like everything that I'm hearing, everything that I'm reading about. It's a maturity that's hitting our industry, where there used to just be so much work and so few people to do it.
Right, right.
That you could get around. I actually had a conversation with a group that started by selling websites door to door.
Wow.
They would go door to door to restaurants and other businesses like that. Like, you would sell Yellow Pages, which in the, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, that was legit. But now with anything from Squarespace to Wix to all that kind of stuff, you can't be based on that. So it's got to be this focus of specialty.
Yeah. You know, the thing that Newfangled faced, can we have the most impact on our clients by coding it? Is that our unique ability? Are we really that much better at coding than everybody else? And does a client have any perception of that at all? Can they evaluate good code or not? Yeah. No. So most firms who are in the web development space are all facing the exact same thing we faced, and they all really do need a position. And what's interesting about this is that most of those firms actually have a positioning. They are really, really good at something. They just don't know it. They haven't noticed it. They haven't realized it.
Right.
Right. The expertise is there.
Well, Mark, thank you so much for being with us on the Bureau Briefing today. Do you have any parting words for the shops out there that are thinking about making this move?
Yeah. Play to the truth. Look at what the truth act. What's the truth? Just shut up and.
Now you sound like everybody I've ever had a serious relationship with. Carl, shut up.
We've stopped talking.
We've come a long way. What's the truth?
We've come a long way in the past few days, Carl. You and I. Yeah. But that's really it, because, you know, I think we all know what's really going on. All right. And we're scared of some parts of it, and we're excited about some other parts of it. I think if we just look at what's happening, we know what the answers are. And the truth is a great teacher. And cold showers.
There you go. And cold showers for sure.
Yep.
Again, thank you so much. You know, it's funny as I look at the Bureau, and again, you know, we're both founders of things that we didn't start. We're both owners of things that we didn't start. Yeah. Sorry. And you know, I mean, the Bureau obviously has this focus, but I'm not sure that I do. And so just having this opportunity to talk with you, I think has made me rethink about a lot of the ways that we're doing things. So personally, thank you. For everybody listening, thank you. And I'm sure that we'll be seeing you around the Bureau.
Absolutely. And I want to thank you on behalf of your audience right back at you. I mean, the work you're doing and just in getting to know you and knowing that you're come from the heart. You really want all of these businesses who you serve to be better businesses, to be more successful businesses. And you're doing everything you can as an entrepreneur to make that happen. And that's yeoman's work. It is hard. It's risky, especially the particular business you're in. Event management is incredibly risky. And the fact that you're putting it all on the line ultimately to serve your audience as best as you know how is really commendable. And I appreciate it tremendously. So thanks for the work you do as well.
You got it. I appreciate it, Mark. Everybody, we will talk to you soon and hope that you tune back in. Have a great weekend. Bye.